This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Switching careers from attorney to actor will likely cost you financial freedom. But today's guest, Eli Rosen, shares how the agonizing decision to leave his ultra-Orthodox Hasidic community to do just that bought him much more freedom than money can buy. It's Monday, June 5th. We're talking new beginnings, and this is Love Bites Radio.
Welcome to Love Bites, coming at you live from Heritage Radio Network. I'm one of your hosts, Jacqueline Arpozzo. I'm 35, single, and you can find me as at Words Food Arts.
And I am your other host, Ben Rosenblatt. I am 34, in a relationship, and can be found as at Ben Rose NYC.
Hello, Benjamin.
Hello, Jacqueline. It's
how's that chair doing over there for you?
It feels nice and cushy. How's your stiff chair over there?
I like seeing you in that chair.
Thank you. I'm in the captain's chair
today
for all of you who can't see us, which is all of you. When are we going to have like a live video feed?
I don't know. When I learned how to do Facebook Live photo videos,
there's a camera in there, you know.
I know. That's David. That's our God of War.
Oh, hello.
Hello, David.
Oh, hello.
Hello, David. Are you ready with the hot buttons for our game later?
You know it.
I'm a little nervous about that.
We're not going to hear that one at all. It's going to be all the buzzer.
You're going to get me back for every single game that has come before.
That is correct. Well, no, I put a couple cupcakes in there for you,
oh,
so
yay.
It should be all right.
All right. Well, should we get on with it then?
Yes. Today we are continuing our series on New Beginnings.
Number 5.
And we have actually a good friend of mine in the studio today, Mr. Rosen. And actually, Eli Rosen is our guest today, and it's actually his birthday.
It is?
Yes,
today.
It is.
You did not prepare me for that.
So,
thank you so much for
spending part of your birthday.
We should have cake or pizza or cocktails or something.
We'll get some cocktails after.
We gotta step it up a little bit.
We won't ask you how old you are, unless you want to share.
Well, we'll save that for the end of the show.
Okay. Great.
He's a very smart man, I can tell already. Why don't you?
Let me give a formal introduction.
Here we go. Hi, David.
Born into and raised in the Hasidic community of Borough Park in Brooklyn, New York, Eli attended rabbinical school and served as a cantor and assistant rabbi before moving on to a career in commercial litigation. Now a recovering attorney, Eli is pursuing his lifelong passion in the dramatic and performing arts. Since his professional theater debut in New Yiddish Rep's smash off-Broadway hit, God of Vengeance, Eli spends most of his time translating classic plays into Yiddish and producing and rehearsing for upcoming shows. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So we're going to start off today, as we continue our series on New Beginnings, with just a quick roundtable discussion on self-care. I think one of the things we talked about a lot on this show, especially in the beginning when we talked about dating a lot and that sort of treacherous jungle of dating, was how we take care of ourselves and how we keep ourselves mentally and emotionally healthy. And so I'll just kick it out to you guys, asking actually for advice, because I am terrible at keeping myself emotionally stable in times of emotional upheaval, in life upheaval. So do either of you have any great tips or strategies for how you keep yourselves healthy in those times?
Well, that's a loaded question. I mean, you're assuming a lot right there. Emotional stability is definitely a long-term goal of mine. but maybe not that much of a short-term goal. How do I keep myself healthy and sane? Well, I find writing to be extremely therapeutic, and that includes anything from, you know, just transcribing old manuscripts. That's generally mindless and tedious, although gratifying work, to translating plays from Hebrew verse into English, into Yiddish, which is
so. Would you say that the writing that you do to kind of keep yourself healthy is like distraction, or is it writing that you help to kind of get out any of the thoughts and feelings that you have?
I guess it's more of the distraction variety, because I'm not really doing any original creative writing right now. Although sure. That's definitely something that I'd love to do.
I think for me, like I know myself, and I can only feel calm, especially with a transition, especially with a big life change or a new beginning coming, if I feel prepared. I feel very emotionally unstable when I don't have the parameters that I can control or any controllable variables explored and discovered. So for me, it's about figuring out what options are out there. If I talk to my close people in my inner circle, which sometimes includes you, it includes my best friend, it includes my brother, it includes my mother, it includes the people who I trust who know me well, to figure out, like, is this the best choice for me or not? And then I jot lists, you know, like, what do you call them? Good, bad
list,
pros and cons list, you know, and then I just sort of go with my gut on something. But for me, it's about being over-prepared for things and overthinking, because once I've overthought something to a certain extent, how it makes me feel, how it will affect the people around me, then I know if I'm making the right choice or not. And I can go with my gut because I know that my gut has sort of weighed all of these things out, and it's less about fear and about the unknown and about, like, all right, well, at least I know what I don't know. At least, like, if I'm making a decision and I'm moving forward and I know that, okay, like, I can't control X, Y, and Z, I know I have controlled A, B, and C. And so I feel better about those things. Like, so I've prepared what I can prepare. I've thought through what I won't be able to, you know what's coming. And at least, like, I've done as much work as I can. And so I can feel calmer going forward. It's like, you know, I've faced, at least I know what the demons are going to be, even if I don't know how I'm going to deal with them once they come. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
But I know that I'm an over-preparer. So even when something is coming and I can't, and I don't have the time or the space yet to explore it, I just tell myself, all right, you don't have the time or the space now, but tomorrow, the next day, you'll figure it out. Like, you'll do the over-preparing, and once you're over-prepared, then you'll face it and you'll be fine. And so I can at least even comfort myself knowing that I'll just over-prepare myself and then I'll be okay.
You said something that, like, really struck me, which is that, like, you, once you feel totally confident that you're making the right decision, then you feel good about moving forward. I think for me, one of the things is, like, I always feel like even after I've made a decision, I'm, like, waffling back and forth of, did I do the right thing? Like, how do you actually get to that place?
Not necessarily knowing that I've made the right decision, but it's at least having worked through to make the decision and then embracing it as if it's the right one. Because you can really only control how you feel about something or how you think about it or how you communicate. Like, you can only control how you feel about it. You can't control if it's the right or wrong decision, right? So, like, if I've overthought and I've over-communicated, then at least, like, I've gotten the sludge out and I can embrace the new thing. If it's a job or a move or me trying a job that I'm not sure I'm qualified at least I can embrace it and be like, well, I'm going to go balls to the wall with this decision as if it's the right one, because at least I know the ways that I might fail and I'm going to just hope that I don't, you know? Like, so it's still not knowing that something. We never know. You can never know what the right decision is. But
yeah,
at least, like, you can fake your way through this stuff that you might not have down.
Yeah, to that point, Ben, who's been giving me some acting classes, great acting coach, by the way, I gotta say.
Thanks for that plug.
And I think one of the most important things that he taught me, and one of his most oft-used lines, is go before you're ready.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful life lesson. You know, coming from a legal background, lawyers are notoriously risk-averse. And talk about doing pros and cons. I mean, they don't do anything before first doing a risk assessment. And by leaving that, I've kind of rejected that whole school of thought, and my current philosophy in life is generally go before you're ready.
Yeah.
And you know what they and you know, on my birthday, I guess this is a great time to bring this up, but they do say that, you know, they do all these surveys of hospice nurses, and the most oft-cited deathbed regret is the things they didn't do.
Of course.
Not the things they did.
Right.
So I would rather go, you know, balls to the wall, as you say, and take that risk and take that plunge and do it, even if it was the wrong decision, then spend the rest of my life thinking, wondering what would have been or what could have been.
Well, and also, the sooner you make the decision, the sooner you find out if it's the right one or not. If you fail, at least you fail faster.
Totally.
You know, like, chances are you're not going to learn. If you make a decision today or 3 days from now, chances are you're not going to learn that much more in the next 3 days that's going to help you succeed or fail in, you know, this is a general conversation we're having. But the sooner you make the choice, the sooner you get to act on something. And the sooner you find out if it's the right or wrong choice.
Totally. And I think for me, the biggest help in making choices has come from reminding myself that I'm not necessarily or don't have to be ever stuck in whatever choice I make at a given time. And a reminder that, like, I can make a choice and then I can make a completely different choice the next day.
Right.
If I want to.
And it comforts me to know that most other people are waffling about decisions too with it. Like, none of us know. Nobody knows what the right decision is.
Totally faking it and trying to fake it and make it, you know?
Just stumbling around in the dark.
Exactly. If there was a way to do life, then we'd have the book, which I guess some people consider a testament, a Bible, but anyway, we'll get there. Well, so maybe, speaking of not knowing things or knowing them, should we move on to our game, Benjamin?
Yes, let's play a game. I am so excited that today I get to be the one who is administering the game on the guests, as opposed to being the one in
Give
the hot
seat. Give it to
seat.
Us. Give it to us.
Today's game, because we have Jewish actor Eli Rosen here and Jewish actor Ben Rosenblatt in the room.
And wannabe Jew, Jacqueline.
And wannabe Jew, the woman who dates many Jewish actors.
It's always by accident.
Anyway, and because we're on the greatest radio network for food-focused programming in the world, I'm going to be asking questions about Jewish actors and characters and where and what they eat in movies.
Oh.
So here are four multiple choice questions for Eli and Jacqueline. We'll see how they do.
We're on the same team, right?
You're on the same team,
okay,
so you're working together.
So see, to get these. Here.
So first question.
And if we win, we get brisket.
Okay. Well, who's cooking that?
Damn it!
All right, here we go.
Okay.
The first question. The first one's a cupcake for you, Jacqueline.
Okay.
In Billy Madison,
mm-hmm.
famous Jewish actor comedian Adam Sandler's character has a favorite food item he wants the maid Juanita to put in his lunch. It is A, a banana, B, Lunchables, C, Dunkaroos, or D, snack pack.
It's D.
David knew that one.
It's a snack pack.
Did you know, Eli?
No, I was going to say that having grown up on Jewish cuisine, none of those foods actually meant anything to me. Except for the banana, I suppose.
It's more just an Adam Sandler
being ridiculous. It's more of an Adam Sandler thing. I thought I was your snack pack. Okay, anyway.
It can be all milk.
All right, so you guys, as a team, are one for one. Uh-huh. Question number two. In Crossing Delancey, the earnest and religious Jew, Sam, offers to take the reluctant Isabel to this Lower East Side restaurant. A, Katz's Deli. B, Sammy's Romanian. C, Yonah Schimmel Knish Bakery. Or D, The Magician.
Okay, I don't know that movie, but I don't think it's The Magician, even though it's the Lower East Side. Katz is technically on the Lower East Side because it's on the south side of Houston. I don't know about that. Do you have a guess?
Well, I would say that Katz is kind of the obvious answer. So I'm leaning toward... I'm trying to remember where Sammy's Romanian is.
I know, me too.
It sounds familiar.
It's either Village or Lower East Side. It could be north of Houston. I'm not sure.
I'm tempted to go
All
with
of
B.
those places are on the Lower East Side.
But you don't know the movie either?
I've seen clips of it, but I don't think I've ever seen the whole thing.
I haven't either. All right, well, what, just you want to switch?
Sammy's Romanian.
Okay, we're going to say Sammy's Romanian.
That is correct.
Yes.
Yes.
Ha ha ha. Hey, David, there we go. Thank you.
He's asleep at the wheel over there. It's okay. Two for two. Very
so
impressive.
So we only need one more. We need one
Where's
more,
my
Eli.
Snack pack?
Oh, yes. Brilliant.
Oh, David.
Oh, that is one of my favorite movies. Okay.
Make sure you get that brisket in the oven.
I know, really.
Oh, uh-oh. Question number three. In the 1989 rom-com When Harry Met Sally, Harry, played by Jewish actor Billy Crystal, meets Sally in this famous New York City restaurant. A, the Carnegie Deli. B, Katz's Deli. C, Sarge's Delicatessen. Or D, Mendy's Kosher Delicatessen.
Is this a trick question?
I'm pretty sure it's B, Katz's Deli.
It is definitely Katz's Deli, but I wasn't sure if there's another one.
Trick. Oh, okay. It is B, Katz's Deli.
And by the way, listeners, if you want to get some nerdy backstory in Katz's Deli, Google my name and Katz's Deli, and there's an interview I did with the grandson on SiriusEats.com that I did a couple years ago.
Oh, very cool.
So, yeah, and Jake Katz. And actually, that movie actually helped Katz's Deli stay open. Like, it helped, like, resurge their popularity. So it's a very interesting story.
I would think that the pastrami alone would do the trick. But anyway, moving on.
Do you have a lifetime supply of pastrami?
Oh, God, no, I wish.
That would be amazing.
But I did have a very, very good meal that day. I ate a lot of pickles.
Okay, question number four, the final question. Can you guys go 4-4-4?
I already feel like we've won, but...
You've won, but can you go
of course.
Perfect?
Oh, we've
four
got
four.
This. We've got this.
Has that ever happened in the history of this show?
World renowned
I don't think so.
And highly esteemed Jewish actor Ben Rosenblatt has a favorite type of pickle.
Oh my goodness.
It is A, Vlasic sandwich stackers.
Oh my goodness.
B, Batampte garlic dill. C, McClure's spicy, or D, any kind of bread and butter pickle.
This is so hard, and I feel like as your favorite person in the whole world, I should know this. I want to say C or D, but I don't really know.
I don't know. I'm really tempted to go with B again, even though there have been too many Bs in this game. But
what was B?
Batamte, was it garlic?
Garlic dill.
Dill.
Garlic dill. Well, let's go with that, Eli. Let's go with B.
I mean, that's very specific, and it's a great pickle.
Eli went with his gut, and he nailed it.
Yay!
Batampte.
Can we get like louder? Louder! Yay!
Wow, I totally failed in stumping you guys.
So Benjamin. How many did we get right?
Okay, all right.
How many did we get right?
It's time
How
to take a quick
right?
commercial break. But before we do, pause to hear a word from our sponsor. We'd like to inform you of Heritage Radio Network's big summer membership drive that is coming up. It begins June 14th, and it's so important that we raise funds to increase our membership numbers and to keep all of Heritage Radio's amazing content on the air. And to do so, we'd like to invite you to help us kick off the summer drive by joining us for a party at The Topaz, a new cocktail bar with an old soul here in Brooklyn, right off the Montrose stop on the L train. Come rub elbows with your favorite hosts and food radio superstars.
Their foodios.
As
I like
we
that.
Ring in the summer in their private courtyard. Fried chicken, small plates, grilled cheese, and specially crafted cocktails will all be available for purchase. Entry is free,
it's
though,
next
of course,
Wednesday, the
14th,
yes.
Entry is free, though, of course, a donation is kindly requested to help the summer drive get off to a great start. And as always, we remind you to log on to heritageradionetwork.org, click on the beating heart, and pledge your membership today. We'll be right back.
Daddy?
Yes, son?
What does regret mean?
Well, son, a funny thing about regret is that it's better to regret something you have done than to regret something you haven't done.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
And we are back with...
The triumphant
Jacqueline and Eli. No, we are back with chassid turned actor Eli Rosen. Eli, your story is so massive and so interesting and so vast that we could really do three different shows on three different facets of your story. One is just your whole desire, your whole story up to leaving the Hasidic community. The other, which we had talked about doing, was a show on your love life, because we've talked so much about love lives here on this show. But we decided to focus on you changing careers, because we're talking about new beginnings, and this is a major shift in your life. And so just to give us a little bit of background to get us started, what happened in between the time that you left the Hasidic community to the time where you what happened that made you decide that you wanted to now become an actor? And what allowed that to kind of spring forth in you since leaving the Hasidic community?
Well, you know, we were talking about, you know, grabbing life by the horns and going with your gut and all that. There was a period of time, about 3 or 4 years, when I was kind of feeling very listless and you know, purposeless. And a lot of that was as a result of losing my faith, losing my community, losing my religion, and everything that came along with that. But I also felt like I took this really, this major drastic step in my life to kind of live my truth and do what I believed in and no longer live a lie. And yet I felt like I was still stuck in this profession where I was essentially in many ways living a lie.
In what ways, please?
Well, I felt like my creative soul was dying. You know, I mean, one of the things I love in general is writing. And as a litigator, you obviously do a lot of writing. That's virtually all you do, but, it's very formulaic. It's very technical. And, you know, as a big law associate, even those few opportunities you have to try to be creative and original in your writing, because of the layers of editing and censorship that your draft goes through, by the time you get it back, it's completely unrecognizable, and every ounce of creativity has been squeezed out of it. So I felt like I had to do something, make a change, so I can justify all the other changes that I've already made in my life up until that point.
And what was the initial cost of those changes to yourself and to the relationships in your life?
Exorbitantly high.
What? Can you give an example?
Well, first of all, obviously, I mean, to say I took a pay cut would be a huge understatement. You know, that obviously affects your life in so many ways and on so many levels, but also just in terms of my relationships and in terms of my family. my parents, who are, who, you know, to their credit, are incredibly supportive, and although they may never fully accept me or condone what I'm doing or my lifestyle or the choices that I've made, are generally accepting and very loving. But at the same time, it's incredibly difficult for them to wrap their heads around some of the choices I've made, especially, you know, leaving a lucrative career in the law, to do something as radical and as risky as going into acting.
Now, you said that it was sort of this need to express that you weren't satisfying. But what was the thing that actually pushed you over the edge to quitting your job and to seeking a new creative? Like, what was the actual line that had you, like we were discussing before the break, like making the decision and moving forward?
So in my case, it was actually, in many ways, a decision was made for me. In the sense that, you know, I was laid off from the big firm that I was at, which is par for the course. Attrition rates in big law firms are incredibly high. Less, you know, maybe a few percent of any entering class of associates actually make it to partner. And I tried looking for something after that, although I'd already made up my mind at that point that I wasn't going to return to a big firm. So I was thinking of going to a small firm or maybe branching out into another area of the law. Didn't really find anything that spoke to me. And eventually did find a job at a smaller firm where I spent a few months, but I was very unhappy and I ended up leaving there as well. I tried starting my own practice. I tried different things. But ultimately, I came to the realization that none of it was working because it's not what I wanted to do, and I just wasn't happy with it.
So now you're jobless, you're broke, you've strained familial relationships. I imagine you don't have many connections into the theater and film world. What steps do you take to actually become an actor from nothing, from no experience?
So I've been incredibly fortunate. What happened was that I was, at that point, still giving my own solo practice the old college try, and I got a call from some friends of mine that are also ex-Hasidic, and they're actors, and they started their own film production company, and they were looking for a lawyer to help them out, help them get off the ground and get their paperwork in order and so on. And so they called me, and during one of our lunch meetings, I just casually remarked that I, besides from being involved in the business end of things, I'd also love to be involved in the creative side. I've always wanted to do something like that. And they mentioned to me that Milena Kartofsky-Ajak from Paris, she's a wonderful artist and anthropologist, was doing this experimental theater lab for ex-Hasidic artists and actors. And they urged me to join that lab. And at first I thought, this is crazy. I've never done anything like this before. I thought I might be too old to think about going into acting, and it just seemed like a wild fantasy. It didn't seem like anything I could actually pull off at the time.
So what did that, when you started getting involved, since we're focusing on new beginnings, what did making the leap and joining and sort of starting to explore this field that you had no history in, what do you remember about the, if there was an emotional release, if it gave you a way to sort of face this sort of ennui that you had been feeling before? Like, what do you remember about this sort of new world and what it fulfilled for you that hadn't been fulfilled before? What did it bring into your life in those earlier days?
Well, all I can say is that during that theater workshop that we did, you know, I never felt so alive. I never felt so real, so honest. And the moment it was I think it was 9 days of like a fully immersive workshop. It was all day, every day. And then it culminated in this open session, open workshop that we did for an invited audience. And, you know, at that moment that I walked out on stage and did whatever silly little experimental improv bit I did, I instantly knew that this is what I was going to do.
How?
It was like, you know, people talk about being bitten by the acting bug, and that's just what happened. It was love at first sight.
Why? How?
I guess it just fulfilled so many different needs of myself in terms of you know, I've always been incredibly cerebral and pensive and thoughtful, but I've at the same time, and probably because of that, I have trouble actually getting in touch with my emotions. And that kind of gave me a safe space to really explore that. And then there's just the exhilarating feeling of being out there. It's like walking a tightrope without a safety net. There's little to no room for failure. There's no producer with their hand on the button. There's no editing. It's live. It's real. And it's intoxicating.
What role do you feel like acting plays for you in your life right now? Is it a therapy for you? Is it a fun? Is it purely for exhilaration and excitement? Does it feel like a vocation for you yet?
Yes, to all of that. It allows me to be creative. It allows me to be honest with my thoughts and feelings. It allows me to create art and you know, provoke other people, which is really what any art, the raison d'être of any art form. And it's...
How does it allow you to be honest with your thoughts and feelings in a way that is different than you, in a way that you weren't honest with your thoughts and feelings before? When you say that you're a cerebral person who is not connected to their emotions before, and this is giving you that space to be honest with your feelings, like, what have you discovered about yourself that does feel new and genuine and true, that in your prior life that was very regimented and had rules and had order, you didn't either know that existed or were denying existed within you?
You just reminded me of something actually that I talked about last year when we were doing this. In the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community, in the Hasidic lifestyle especially, it's not only your actions that are restricted. In a very large sense, your emotions are restricted as well. You're mandated when to be happy, when to be sad.
Yeah.
That's no exaggeration. I mean, there are times of the year when you're commanded to be happy, and there are times of year when you're commanded to be sad. And most of the other times, you're trained to walk around with the sense of, you know, fear of God's presence, and, you know, every step is calculated and regimented. So there's very little room for that kind of self-expression. I mean, the phrase self-expression does not exist in the Hasidic vocabulary. It really doesn't. So that's why, to me, this is all so novel and exciting. But also, you know, also on a personal level, I've always had trouble with that. Whether it's because my parents are children of the Holocaust, and so there's all kind of the emotional baggage that comes with that, and Everybody was always so stoic and then talk about the past and then talk about their feelings and just you know, carried on because that's what we do. So being able to express your emotions and be honest and kind of not wallow in self despair, but really feel them, you know, let them marinate. That's something that's wow. kind of allowed me to live in a way that I've never really lived before.
It's amazing how much you're talking about this personal growth that you're experiencing. And I'm curious, like, is that the number one goal for you in your work? And, like, what outside of that do you have for goals as far as, like, career goals? And or is that something that's not even on the map for you kind of at this point?
Well, it's very difficult for me to kind of really look forward and plan ahead in that sense because, I mean, a year ago, if you told me that I'd be on a radio show talking about my acting career, I would just laugh. But I've been doing a lot of writing, and I would love to do more of that. I would love to do some original writing as well eventually.
I know you're doing a lot of writing for the New Yiddish Rep, with whom you appeared off Broadway, and a lot of your acting work has been with New Yiddish Rep, and I know you also were just a consultant on HBO for a project which included Yiddish. Does the connection to Yiddish in your work, how important is that to you given your background, and how much of that do you want to hold on to, and how much of that do you feel like is a niche that you don't want to be associated with?
Well, I do really, I mean, it took me some time once I left the community to reach a point where I was comfortable with adapting certain parts of my culture and owning them and kind of making peace with my past and using it to form a kind of a new sense of self, a new sense of identity. Because your initial reaction is just kind of run away from all that. But at this point in my life, I mean, it is who I am. I mean, I it's my mother tongue. It's my first language, and I will always love the language. So as much as I can work with that, that's always great. And you know, I'm not kidding myself. I mean, all the opportunities that I've gotten mostly because of that, because of my unique skill set when it comes to Yiddish. But at the same time, I would love not to be a one-trick pony and do other things as
Wouldn't
well.
Wouldn't we all?
Well, you're still a baby in the acting world. You got time. You're marinating.
Exactly. I'm in no rush.
Well, unfortunately, speaking of time, we've got to wrap it up. So we're going to finish with a question that we ask everybody at the end of every show. And so particularly on the point of your new beginning, on one chapter of your life ending and this new one starting, what has your new beginning story taught you about love? And we keep that vague intentionally, but what have you learned about love from taking this large leap into the unknown?
I guess I've learned that it's never too late. And, you know, having loved and lost and being divorced and having had my share of ill-fated love affairs, the one thing that I've really learned is that it's never too late.
I like that.
Great lesson.
I like that ending. Thank you so much for joining us today, Eli, and spending some time with us.
It was an absolute pleasure. Despite the very conspicuous lack of food.
We're going to remedy that right now.
And thank you for doing that on your birthday as
yes,
well.
Yes, very much. I think that's like the second or third time that's happened on this show.
We're very lucky.
I know, we are very lucky. So listeners, thank you so much for joining us today. You can find more about Eli Rosen at our website, lovebitesradio.com. Come back next week. We are wrapping up our New Beginnings series with The Best Of, where you are going to hear what everybody, our five guests, have learned about love from their New Beginning adventures. So come back next week for that. A quick and friendly reminder to rate and review us on iTunes. We will love, love, love you forever for that. It only takes a minute and it really helps us out. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, David. Our theme song is Give Love by Josh Dion, and we are Jacqueline Raposo and Ben Rosenblatt. Love Bites. We'll be back at the same time next week here at Heritage Radio Network.
See ya.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.